Hey, movie geeks, this is Rob, back for episode 3? Yes, episode 3 of Movie Geek and Proud. I also want to, I guess, apologize about the first episode. There's been a couple of comments about the volume being too low. I am a novice at this, and I'm still kind of learning, but I'm having a lot of fun doing this. So, I'm like Michelle Morris from Dreamgirls, and just getting into this business. So, I'm hoping to get a lot better as I have more practice, but I enjoy podcasting. It's been fun just like talking about movies and stuff like that with my friends. Speaking of, I'm here with Sean once again. Hey,
it's
Sean.
About goddamn time. I'm sitting here all quiet.
I'm sorry. Anyways, how are you today?
I'm good, Rob. Restraining orders can't keep me back.
So I want you to tell everyone what you saw over the weekend.
Well, I saw Avengers again, and I saw Ghost Stories.
How did you think Avengers was the second time around?
I actually liked it better the second time because knowing where the story's going, you can just kind of sit back and enjoy all the Easter eggs and the writing of the story rather than just being on the edge of your seat, like waiting to see what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely want to see this movie again. It was a really good movie, mm-hmm. But I was talking to my boss earlier this week, and she said that her 9-year-old son had seen Avengers. And immediately I just was like all smiles. I was like, oh my God, he loved it. And then she goes, he hated it.
Oh.
And my face just dropped. And it wasn't out of like disappointment. It was more of a shock because I can't imagine any child who wouldn't like this film. And then she was telling me, well, he didn't like how it ended.
Mm.
And I had to take a step back and be like, I didn't even think of it that way. Kids may not receive this movie the way adults would when they know that there's going to be a second part and a lot of things may not be as what it seems. And so they're watching their heroes go through so much turmoil, and I didn't even think about it. Kids may not, I haven't heard anything else, but yeah, I didn't even think about that.
I do hear a lot of people saying that it made them sad, mm-hmm. which is funny to me because knowing where the story goes, you know, it's cool. Like, even not knowing the story, Spider-Man has another movie coming out. Obviously, he's not gone.
Yeah.
But you're right. A lot of people are taking it that way. And it's interesting that Marvel has two movies in between. So we have to sit here with this big old shit in us. Like, what happened to all our heroes?
I think we need a little bit of a break from what we just saw. I that was just intense. But anyways, yes, let's talk about Ghost Stories. 3 minutes or less. Let's give our review. What did we think of Ghost Stories?
I loved it. I felt like it's one of those movies I definitely want to see again because you're watching a certain type of movie and then it flips it on you.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Yeah. I love anthology movies. Some people may not call this anthology because of the way that it connects in the same story, but we are given three different distinctive tales that happen to three different people, ghost stories mostly. Actually, I don't know what we were dealing with in that second story, but it's a British horror. It came out in 2017, but wasn't really released until now. And it's here in one of our LA theaters for a week. So I just made a point to go see it. And it was creepy. It was a very old school ghost story type of, you know, movie where the scares were very simplistic, very old fashioned, not as predictable, but it still packed a punch. You know, they took the simplest forms of fear, just being afraid of the dark or just, you know, like a scary corner or just things not being explained. And all of the incidents were isolated, and I just found all of that to be very entertaining. But like you said, towards the end of the movie, it just did this little shift in tone. And do you did you think that was a bad thing?
I don't think it was a bad thing. I just think it was maybe a little bit jarring.
Okay.
It's smart, though. It's a smart story. That's why I want to see it again. I already have plans to.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I can sit and, through the beginning, look for what leads into that second
part. I saw so much stuff. There was so much. Because I saw it a second time. And that I caught so much stuff that not necessarily should have given the movie away, but it's been there the whole time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And great acting, and like I said, good scares. So if it's in your theater, I mean, if it's in your neighborhood, take a chance on it. It's actually pretty good. And then you also saw Labyrinth.
Oh yes,
yeah.
I see a lot of movies. Yeah, so I saw Labyrinth. A couple things they did is they showed one of Jim Henson's The Storyteller before it, which was an old TV show that he did the puppetry on. And that show is weird. It's just flat out weird. I used to own it, and I tried to watch an episode, and I don't own it anymore. But it was interesting. He had a lot of good puppet stuff going on. And the story they showed started off slow, but it got better. But they're only like 25 minutes. After that, they showed Jennifer Connelly come on now and kind of talk about her experience with Labyrinth. And if I was ever going to change sides for a woman, like, she is still gorgeous to this day. And she just talked about working with Jim Henson and how that was one of her first movies and how she loved the experience. And then seeing Labyrinth on the big screen, I was there with my friend Rachel and her friends. But we all noticed things, even though we've seen the movie over and over on the little screen. We all noticed different things about it on the big screen, which was fun.
Yeah. I saw Labyrinth on the big screen on my birthday last year. They did that quote-along, sing-along thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such an amazing experience. It was so fun. And it was really nice to see that there are fans out there still enjoying this movie, bringing their kids and making them dress up as the characters on screen. And you know, there are lots of sing-alongs going on, but this one was a quote-along. Like, they chose quotes for you to say in the movie, so we didn't have to be completely quiet throughout the whole thing. And it was really fun. I liked it.
One thing that I was thinking of when I was watching it, and I want your opinion, is do you think they could ever remake Labyrinth?
Oh, that is a really good question. Unless they did old school puppetry, I don't want to see a remake.
Okay, but also they had David Bowie, so how do you replace that?
Well, trust me, they will always, life will find a way.
Ian Malcolm, was that you?
Yeah, no, they will find a way. I actually would have welcomed an animated series of this. Mm. I think exploring more of that world would have been really fun. But if they're going to do another movie, it's got to do the old school puppetry. Otherwise, I don't know. Didn't they announce they are making one.
Oh, are they?
I want to say that it is something that is going to happen, but I mean, I haven't heard nothing lately.
Okay.
So I don't know. We'll see.
They did make a sequel manga to it, and it was bad.
Oh, really?
And Jareth was like the principal at Toby's high school, and like there was a gothic fairy like wearing all black with like the shoes, but I'm like, she's from the Labyrinth. They were all flying around naked. Where did this gothic fairy come from?
Too funny. I know that they created this really nice board game. Have you seen photos or anything of it? I would look that up. They really went all out on this board game with their set pieces and just the storyline. The game, from the last time that I looked, was going to cost like quite a bit of money.
Ooh,
I mean, they really put a lot of detail into this. So that's one of the things on my Christmas list. But that's cool that you got to see the movie. I would see advertisements of it all the time online. So, yeah. Okay, let's talk some trailers.
All right.
What did you think of the Venom trailer?
I'm living for that trailer. Actually, it's funny because the day that it came out, I went home and Chris is a huge Venom fan. So we sat on the couch and he rewound the end of that trailer literally 5 times to see the Venom suit coming up and we are Venom.
Yes, I did that too. I just was so impressed with the CGI that they used to create him and just the way that it's manipulating his body and all of that. This is a character that I know nothing about. The only variation that I've seen was Topher's.
Oh, so you haven't seen one.
Exactly. But what I found interesting in this trailer was that it was its own, not entity, but it was its own sort of species, I guess. Like, it entered Tom Hardy, but it was still, like, 2-in-1, you know, right. Like he had, it wasn't like a possession. It was just sharing the bodies and they were talking to each other and working together. And I also thought that he was a straight up villain. Like, I'm sensing a little anti-hero here. I had no idea. And so to me, that just makes it look more interesting.
Now, what's funny too that I noticed, cause also I was with a group of comic nerds and we saw it for Avengers. In the preview, it specifically says Marvel Comics, but above that it says in association with. So, our Marvel Studios, not comics. But I'm wondering, is this like on training wheels to see if it does well and then they'll integrate it to the MCU? Or does it stand outside of it? Because there's been rumors both ways. And there's been rumors that Tom Holland will be in it.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I look forward to it. It had lots of action. I enjoy Tom Hardy. It's another DC to Marvel.
Yep.
You know, transition. We love DC. That's hashtag DC to Marvel. I've been using that because Michelle Pfeiffer is doing the same thing in Ant-Man. I'm so excited.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, DC to Marvel. But what about Jurassic World 2.
The more I see of it, the more it looks just like Lost World.
It is exactly like Lost World. Here's the thing. I'm not mad, but they are recycling the exact same plot, except for the fact that they're trying to weaponize these dinosaurs. That's why they're capturing them. And it makes sense, but yeah. Let's send you out there for rescue mission. Uh-oh, we lied to you. You're actually here to help us catch. Now, come on. And then there's this whole blue thing connection going on. I mean, I get it, but I mean, honestly, what else can you really do? It's like you need a reason to go back to that island, and nobody's going to be dumb enough to just go on there. Oh, nope, scratch that, directs part 3.
I mean, I'm open to it. I'm excited for it. Well, I'm just not super excited for it. It's not like I get excited for Star Wars or a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm still going to go. I mean, it looks like it has a lot of action in it. Mm-hmm. You know, usually with sequels, they just give you more and double whatever it is that made it right the first time. And our Ian Malcolm is back. I don't know for how long, but he's back. And so is BD Wong, which I'm really glad that he's returning. So... yeah, it should be good.
Yep, and husband number 4 is in it, so...
Jesus.
I'm all for it. Chris Pratt, if you're out there, we're married.
Okay, so let's get down to Rob's collection. So the first time I did this, we did Beetlejuice. I decided to keep that on the shelf. And this time we are going to do a totally different movie. This one is a little bit of an intense drama. It's called Requiem for a Dream. And it's directed by Darren Aronofsky. Did I say that right?
Sure.
Okay. This movie came out in 2000. And it's stars Jared Leto, Jennifer Connelly, Ellen Burstyn, and Marlon Wayans. Let's see. Budget was $4,500,000, and then in the U.S., it only made $3,635,000. Well, what I think happened was it wasn't as widely released.
Okay.
I want to say it was more on the, you know, the low key side, if I remember correctly. I'm trying to think if I saw this in theaters, and I can't remember if I did or not. I mean, that's just how long ago it was. But worldwide, it made $7 million. Three. Okay. Plus. So, I mean, it didn't really do too well at the box office, but this is one of those movies that will stick to you to the end of time. And people honestly are still talking about it. And this movie also created a lot of jokes at mocking sort of the quick cut scenes that they do when people are either taking drugs or some kind of enhancement. They always use those little cut scenes and little clips to show that they're on something. So, I mean, this has obviously left a mark in cinema. And Aronofsky, like, you know, I can't say I'm not a big fan. I'm not aware of his library. The only other movie that I can remember at this moment is Mother that I've seen. But I'm sure he's made more, and I probably have seen more. Do you remember which ones?
Black Swan, haven't you?
Yes. He did that. I like Black Swan.
And then besides those two, I've seen The Fountain.
Okay, I haven't seen The Fountain. So The Fountain's good?
Yes, I really like The Fountain.
Okay, Fountain's good. Well, I'll have to check that out. Well, again, Black Swan is just another movie that is just so strong. It just leaves a mark on you. You do not walk out happy. He does not want you walking out with a smile on your face. And but this is a favorite of mine, and Sean has never seen it, and so I wanted to show him this movie and also sort of tie this in to the question of the week that I had for you listeners, which is, what movie is so unsettling that you can't even watch twice? Do you have one, Sean?
I do.
Which movie would that be?
I'm going to be specific, too. Okay. It's a sequel. The Human Centipede 2.
You saw part 2.
I went back for more. I challenged myself.
I cannot believe you saw part 2. I read some of the scenes, and I was like, "This, I'm not watching it."
Here's the thing, because I know you've seen 1.
Mm-hmm.
The theme of 1 is that he's a surgical doctor, so he knows what he's doing.
This guy doesn't.
In part 2, he doesn't.
Yes, I did read about that.
So there is just scenes of, like, crap spilling out of their mouths, and it's just dirty. It's dirty.
I cannot believe you watched that.
Yeah, it made me sick.
Okay, well, the movie that I chose was Funny Games.
Okay.
I can't watch that twice. It just pisses me off. It's just too... It's just too much on the dark side. Like, there's no hope. And just when you thought things were looking up, what do they do? It just frustrates me. It's just a depressing... I don't understand why anybody would want to watch this and be entertained. Once was enough for me. I can't do it. But people would put Requiem for a Dream in this category. And yet, I bought the movie. I own it. I don't know why. And it's not like I choose to just be like, ooh, I'm in the mood for Requiem for a Dream. It's usually situations like this where I can show friends or, you know, people who haven't seen it before. And I'll watch it. And it's entertaining. It's not boring. But it is a very unsettling movie. Mm-hmm. So, Sean, initial reactions. What did you think?
Well, here's the thing, because I first heard about it, it had to be shortly after it came out. I was dating this guy who... It was his favorite movie, and he kept saying, like, oh, we need to eventually watch it. We need to watch it. And every time we'd be like, let's watch it, he's like, oh, it's long, and it's slow, and it's sad. So I had this impression all this time of, like, you got to really, like, sit down and be ready to wipe snot off your face and just make it through this really long movie. And
oh, so he said it was, like, blubbery cry sad?
Yeah.
Okay.
He made it seem like that. I don't know if he ever specifically said I would cry.
Okay.
But watching it, I didn't find it super slow, and I didn't find it incredibly sad. Like, it's definitely a depressing movie, but it's not wipes not off your face sad.
Mm-hmm. That's because Sean here has coal for a heart.
Yeah.
Well, no, I wonder, I mean, everybody's different. I mean, we're not all expected to have the same reaction to the same movie. So... why do you think that it was so emotional for him and not for you, if you can think about it?
I would say all my life I've had this aversion to people on heavy drugs, I think.
Okay.
Like, I used to have a friend, and it kind of haunts me to this day. She called me one night and, like, begged me to go to her house and just sit with her. And I'm like, I know you're on cocaine. But just watching most of the characters in the movie, they're doing it to themselves. The one I felt for was the mom.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ellen Burstyn, who was nominated for this role, I mean, she killed this role. She was so amazing. And she lost to Julia Roberts for Erin Brockovich. And, you know, that was good, too. I don't know if I had picked sides that year, but, I mean, they both were phenomenal that year. But Ellen Burstyn, yes, she plays a mother who has one child who is always gone because well, actually, hold on, let's back up a little bit. So for those of you who have not seen this, see, I gotta get used to doing this every episode. So if you haven't seen this movie, Requiem for a Dream is about four individuals who over the course of a year slowly become addicted to drugs in different ways. And they are all influenced into this world of addiction based on a specific and individual dream that they want to accomplish. And we just watch their slow progression as they slowly ruin their lives by, you know, taking drugs. And the mom specifically, she was conned to believe that she is going to be a contestant on a TV show. She just randomly gets a call on the phone, and like a radio station, they're just telling her, you've already won, you're going to be on TV. And she thinks about the good old days where she was young and pretty and slim and, you know, had vibrant red hair, and she just wants to create that look for television. So she decides she wants to lose weight, and she goes on diet pills. But the pills that she's taking are kind of like speed. It gives her tons of energy. She is losing the weight, but she's slowly getting addicted to diet pills. I guess you can say she had a Jesse Spano moment. But yeah, the mom is a woman who's alone. And she's in this apartment. Her husband has died, and her son's never around. And all she has is this fantasy of just being the woman that she used to be and being on TV. And then you just slowly watch her disintegrate and just become, you know, addicted to these pills. And she's hallucinating and all this stuff. And it's just very hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Connelly, I don't know what to say, but she is like the hottest junkie I've ever seen in my life. Like, when you think of people who are like addicted to heroin and cocaine, and like they're usually just like scratching themselves to death, their hair is all jacked up, they haven't taken a shower in days, like that's usually the ideal look. This woman could easily be on the cover of a magazine and be high as hell while she's doing it. I mean, she was just gorgeous in this movie.
I'm so disturbed that I've seen her down there.
You mentioned after watching Labyrinth not too long ago to see her in this hardcore rated R movie. And yeah, this movie was actually NC-17 when it was released. And Aronofsky actually fought to get an R rating, obviously, so he didn't limit the audience that was going to pay for this movie. And so he edited this very vulgar and in-your-face sex scene towards the end of the film, and it involved Colony. And so she's, you know, in the nude and whatnot. And a lot of people don't really see her that way, so it's hard to really look at that. But yeah, I've always enjoyed this movie for its intense realness, the cinematography, and the music, the musical score. Let me just mention it's Clint Mansell, and he did the soundtrack with the Kronos Quartet. I don't know if any of you have ever heard sort of the overall theme score to this movie, but it is amazing. It's just these cellos, these violins, they just sound great. It intensifies the feeling that these characters are having when they're on drugs and just feeling sorrow and just reaching out for a goal that just seems unreachable. And it just puts you in this mood to be so, you know, involved with the story. So what did you think of like the overall plot of this? Like, did you like the pacing and everything, or?
I liked it. Overall, I think the part I liked most about it is seeing the mom struggle, because I think that's such a huge metaphor for living in LA and, you know, trying to be a star. And you see people who do go on drugs in different ways to try to get skinny or try to fit in. And it's just, I think having her want to be on this game show and how that affects people was a really down-to-earth, simple way of showing that addiction and how it comes to be.
Yeah, and it's surprising. It's not like people are just like, oh, I want to try drugs and you know, be cool or whatever. You know, like, it happened to her by accident. She didn't really know what she was taking. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw the health provider who literally walked in and didn't even look her in the eye. He just looked at some stats. Oh, I know what to give you. Bam, diet pills. You want to lose weight? Done. Here mm-hmm. they are. Didn't look at her once. She's trusting a doctor who has a, you know, a license. And she's taking these pills as, you know, as corrected. But I mean, over time, you're going to take more. And she had no idea what was happening to her until it was too late. And then she became addicted. And nobody was there to watch over her.
But what's interesting is, like you said, A, the doctor didn't care because he just wanted his money.
Yeah.
But also the fact that the son did warn her, you know, he came in and said, this is speed, mom, like, you need to not do this. But she didn't care because she wanted to be skinny so that she could fit in that dress and be on TV.
Yeah, it was a really touching monologue that she had with her son, Harry, Jared Leto. She talks about the fact that she has no one. Her husband is gone. Her son's always gone. The fact that she has this possibility of being on this show, she's like the talk of the block. She's got all the women just, you know, constantly paying attention to her. She's the center of attention, and it makes her feel good. And it's not necessarily the drugs. You know, she's losing, you know, weight and she's, you know, getting towards her goal, but it's the attention, it's the affection mm-hmm. that she yearns for. And this, you know, the drugs just happen to get in the way. And it was heartbreaking to kind of hear her plead for affection, and that's all she needed. And who knows if that's all it would have taken for her to get off the drugs, you know?
Right.
So,
I did find it interesting that, what's Harry?
Harry, yes.
Okay. Harry is doing drugs the whole movie, but the minute he finds out his mom's on drugs, that's when he gets upset. His love for her is what finally affects him.
Yeah. I don't know from experience, but I mean, when you're on drugs, you tend to do and say whatever it is you have to do in order to get your next score. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is used to coming over and grabbing her TV or anything of value and pawning it for quick money to get his drugs. And it's just this back and forth that he has with her. And it doesn't mean that he doesn't love her. At the end of the day, he is all about family, but his dream is about Marion, mm-hmm. his girlfriend. He just wants the beautiful life and just be with her. And that's what he's striving for. Him along with Marlon Wayans. I forget his name at the moment. Oh, that's bad. I shouldn't have known this. but they decide that they want to sell the drugs that they sometimes use so they can earn money. And he wants to open up a store for her because she is into design. And he just wants to be with her. But a lot of things are holding them two back. Of course, this drug addiction, but the fact that they can't stand on their own two feet. And, you know, they're always looking to, you know, get their next score and whatnot. But he just wants to be with her. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they mentioned it in the movie, but did it say how he got into drugs? Was it because of her? Did they just experiment? Was it because of the death of his father? I don't, because you saw the graduation photo. Like, he's smart. Mm-hmm. You know, he was, you know, putting the numbers together for her store. I mean, clearly he has a brain. He knows how to, you know, it's funny that when people like are on drugs, you think they're just dimwits and they don't know what's going on. Like, sometimes, you know, you have to be a little calculated. Just think of like Breaking Bad.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they, you know, dealt drugs. They knew how to mix it and all that. That can't be done with a how-to book. Like, you really have to be smart to understand, you know, numbers and, you know, calculations and stuff like that. So he had a brain. It's just he got addicted to drugs somehow. Did you catch if they explain how he got into that?
I didn't.
Okay. I don't think they really explained it. Yeah. The story kind of starts off with him already embedded into this addiction, and you just kind of, you know, watch out for it. What's his name? Oh, Tyrone. Tyrone is his name. Now, Tyrone was an interesting character too, because we didn't get too much backstory with him, but it seemed that his dream was to make his mom proud. I don't know if she was still alive or not. It didn't seem so, because he kept thinking of her in the past tense when he was a kid. So I don't think she was an integral part in his life right now, but he was kind of a mama's boy, and, mm-hmm. you know, he missed his mom, and he, you know, I don't know if the woman represented, like, just a female affection probably to take place of the mom, but, you know, he was his ride or die and partner in crime to do sort of this drug deal with, but every time they seemed to almost get ahead, something would happen, set him back to zero, and... Yeah.
Well, and Tyrone to me almost felt like the devil on Harry's shoulder, because there is that scene where Harry's like, no, I don't want to do it anymore.
And then he just kind of egging him on. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No. You know, there could be sort of a thing to say, like, if they get off the... I mean, he said he doesn't want to be pushing drugs and being on drugs and having his nose fall to his chin and whatever. Like, he wants out of the game himself. But I wonder if he's... crutching on these drugs to keep their friendship intact.
That's true.
That's kind of the sense that I got from it. I mean, I don't know if any of them would be friends, or even if him and Marion would even be together if it wasn't for the drugs that kept them.
Well, that's a good point you make, because Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, mm-hmm. he said one of the hardest things about getting off the drugs is all his buddies, like Marilyn Manson and the whole band, he said he had to cut ties with all of them because that's what held them together.
Yeah. Yeah. Marion is another interesting character, too. I mean...
But her bush.
Should you stop with the bush? Oh, my God. So there's a scene where she's standing in the mirror. And this is kind of where I was getting at. She was staring in the mirror of her body. And I don't know if she liked what she looked at.
She didn't.
And because then the minute she got on drugs, she was just in serenity. And she accepted it. And she was just in bliss. And I think she was literally escaping from reality. She mm-hmm. just did not want to be a part of the life that she's lived. She's comes from privilege. You know, her parents have money, but she really just doesn't want to be the debutante or whoever they want her to be. And she's kind of got a sugar daddy. In a way, she sees a couple of times a month and gets money from him, but she's completely devoted to Harry, so it's not a question about that, of her cheating or whatever. But, yeah, I think she's just literally escaping reality, but all four of these people have a goal to reach. They want something out of life, and I don't think I ever really saw them chase drugs just for the sake of being on drugs. I think it was really to accomplish something, but the addiction just got the best of them.
Right.
Did you notice that when you were watching the movie that you pretty much heard every single sound, every sip, every crunch, every thought? Like, did you notice that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Painfully so.
Now, I don't know if that was used to kind of describe this, their senses being... like enhanced because they're so tripped out. I mean, I was trying to look for a significance as to why we heard like every single crunching noise and sip and yeah.
The one scene I feel like I understand why they did it was when the mom starts her diet mm-hmm. and she's looking down at the food and then it's the big crunching noise. Yeah. I feel like that was kind of like to show how quickly that amount of food is consumed. But it was definitely a little bit jarring just to hear and the whole thing's gone.
That poor woman. I mean, right. She was just so used to, you know, she had a fridge full of meat. Like, so much. And then they just told her no sugar, no carbs, and all the, like, grapefruit and egg. And, oh, that must have been so painful.
I thought of Tiny Toon Adventures when the chocolate cake's in the fridge telling Hampton to come eat it. It's going through my mind.
But, yeah, I really enjoy the cinematography in this. There were a lot of split screen that they did. That I enjoyed. There was also tons of close-ups
mm-hmm.
When they were high. But when they were dreaming or thinking about that fantasy, a lot of stuff was kind of like far away. Specifically with Harry dreaming about Marion at the end of the pier, and he was running to her. And then afterwards, you know, like they're laying on the bed when they were high, and he was just like, you're my dream. Like, I just want to be with you and, you know, stuff like that. So I really enjoy the cinematography on this one.
I'm glad you brought up cinematography because that's another thing that I was totally wrong on.
Okay.
Because I don't know, something about his style from what I've seen of his other movies and just hearing about this movie, I pictured this really long, like beautifully shot, like, okay. Very almost serious movie.
Mm-hmm.
So watching it, I was just completely like taken aback. It almost reminded me of Greg Araki or other kind of experimental directors with the split screens, the close-ups, the fridge coming to life.
Oh my God.
It's not a style that I had seen from him before because The Fountain and Mother and those movies were all a little more steady cam and serious. And yeah. This one was just crazy.
Yeah, I think they really wanted you to get sort of that first person view of what it's like in the mind of someone who's just constantly high and on drugs and just those quick shots and the way that they were, you know, taking the drugs and smoking weed and just, yeah, everything was just happening so quick. There was one shot in particular. It was towards the end when the refrigerator did attack yes. her, and she just ran out of the apartment, and then she's, you know, walking real slowly on the street and everything was moving fast. It looked like a music video yeah. from the 80s. I really love that shot. And then again, the original score, the sort of the theme was playing in the background, and you can just see her, like life is just like passing her by and she slowly is just not going anywhere and she's all paranoid and stuff. And this yeah. movie is so sad.
The split screens really did work well, I felt like. Like when she's sitting on the couch and you see the close-up of her face and on the split screen is the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Eat me, Hampton.
Yeah. And, you know, she goes back to the doctor and she literally is like, look, the diet pills are working. I'm losing weight. It's me that is not fine. I need help. And he was just like, don't worry about it. It's fine. Yep. Side effect, whatever. Just take these, fill it up, and went it back out. Like, it's just so sad. And, you know, like, business is business. But, I mean, this scam who had her send them money to be on this show completely just stole from her and just gave her this ideal that she was going to be on TV. And it just drove her to insanity mm-hmm. almost. And, something that I read about in regards to the quick cutscenes that they had between characters, and especially that huge montage at the end when they're all going through it all at once. So an average movie, about 100 minutes, would have like 600 to 700 cuts, you know, edit cuts going from one, you know, angle to the next. Guess how much this movie had?
How much? 1,000.
More than 2,000 cuts.
Dang, Gina.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised by
that's
that.
That's crazy.
And from a tech point of view, I mean, that is some that's some great editing skill in order to accomplish something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really cool tidbit there. What did you think of how the movie wrapped up?
I thought it was an interesting conclusion for each of them, because you kind of see them all get to their lowest point all at once.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
Watching her get banged on stage.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So Jennifer Connelly gets invited to this party hosted by a bunch of men who use women for sexual favors. And in exchange, you know, they usually are paid in, you know, heroin or drugs or whatever it is that they need. Let me just say, so the guy who invites her, his name is David Keith. I think that's his name. Keith David. No. God, I always forget his name. He was on, what stuff was he on?
Future Man.
Yes, he's on Hulu's Future Man. He was on Meet the Parents in the very beginning. God, what is his name? La 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 la. Oh, there he is. Jesus, Keith David. Okay. So let me just say that Keith David, the guy, his name is Big Tim. And you can all guess why. But he is the one involved with Jennifer Connelly towards the end, as this is her only resource into getting drugs, because Harry just continuously keeps failing on bringing back money or drugs to continue their high. And she gets invited to this wild party, and she's asked to... I don't know. Do we even really want to get descriptive of what she does? I mean, it's so messed up. But this is the scene that needed to be edited to fit a rated R and to be released in theaters. And then the NC-17 or the unrated version was released on DVD. But yes, she was on a table and they were all surrounding her, just yelling and making her like have sex with another woman in very various positions, and it was just
I've never seen you speechless.
It wasn't a good sight to see, but everybody had reached their lowest point, and the mom, I think, got it the worst. She was not necessarily kidnapped, but just out of nowhere, just taken to a hospital and forced to go through electric shock therapy and be fed food through a tube in the nose, and like she lost all of her hair. It was just really sad to see.
She had to walk out without her red hair on anymore and face all the women on the block.
Just completely just not brain dead, but just gone.
Yep.
And the son is none the wiser. He has no idea what's going on. He's dealing with his own problems.
He's unarmed.
Yes. Yeah. But, at the end of the day, this movie is not something that puts you in a good mood. So, after watching this now, Sean, do you have any desire in the future that you would ever want to watch this film again?
I feel about this movie very similar as I do to Trainspotting.
Okay.
Have you seen Trainspotting?
I don't remember it very well, but I do remember seeing it once, at least.
So, Trainspotting's also a drug movie. And it doesn't have the crazy camera work, but very similar kind of sad story. And it's a movie I come back to every once in a while. I would watch this one because I do like the camera work a lot. And I do like the story, but I don't think I'd watch it often, like maybe every 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is that this movie came out in 2000, and this is still something to reference. You know, there's been movies out that are very surreal and sort of I guess it's like in a cinematic point of view, it's just very out there. And this movie is still something to turn to and be like, you want to see some trippy movie? Watch 2000's Requiem for a Dream, you know? But yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I bought it because it is a very intense movie. I enjoy a lot of fantastical stuff, supernatural things that really doesn't depict any signs of reality. And this movie kind of keeps me a little bit grounded, to be honest. I also feel more of a movie buff just having it in my collection as well, because it is a really good movie. And, you know, if people would be like, "Ooh, you got Requiem for a Dream, you have some good taste." I'm like, hey, I'll take that point.
Well, I own The Fountain.
I do have to watch that sometime. But yeah, it is a very intense movie. And again, if I do have an opportunity to show somebody, it gives me a justice to see that somebody got to experience something like I did, and hopefully comes out thinking that, you know, even though it is a depressing movie, it is somewhat interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if entertaining would be the right word for this movie. I mean, there are things that we can latch on and be like, oh, that's done very well. It definitely keeps your attention, right? So do you know anybody that would probably enjoy this movie that you know of that you would show this to?
I think, like you said, I think anybody who hasn't seen it needs to at least see it once.
Mm-hmm.
I think film buffs would be like the audience who would be the ones who are like, I want to watch Requiem for a Dream again today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's rate this film. What are we going to rate it?
Pills.
All right. 1 out of 5 pills. What would you give Requiem for a Dream?
I would give it 3 pills.
3 pills. Okay. Now, I watched this movie over the summer last year, and I gave it a 5 out of 5, but, you know, based on entertainment, because it hit all of the marks of a good movie. Watching it again now, I would actually give it 4 pills.
Mm-hmm.
It loses just a little bit of its spark for me because... it is a very hard film to watch, and it isn't for everyone either.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that this movie can be recommended to anyone. Sometimes this could trigger somebody, to be honest. And also, you know, you don't really, I mean, how do you recommend a movie that's just depressing and sad and you know, doesn't really leave you a good feeling? Like, we just saw Mother. Like, I have no idea who would watch this movie, but it's just one of those movies where you can be like, I've seen it. And you can talk about it. And if it is still the gossip, then you have to go and watch it so you can be part of the conversation. So, I mean, I would say that. I'm sure whoever's listening who haven't seen it, you've heard of this movie. And if you haven't, watch a trailer. Check it out. If it's something that sounds interesting, you know, you may end up liking it. But it's not that perfect movie that's for everyone. So that's why it kind of gets a little down. Okay, let me see. So one other question. When you heard the title Requiem for a Dream, do you even know what the hell that even means?
Well, sort of. Isn't it like basically saying death of a dream?
Okay, so I had to look it up because I was like, up until this day, I never understood why this movie was called Requiem for a Dream. And yeah, I looked up Requiem, and it was a little bit weird as far as the definition of the movie or the word, but combined with, you know, the title. Yeah, I read something about it being sort of a funeral that we're watching, just this slow agonizing towards the end of all of their dreams. Like, if we were watching a ceremony or, you know, a revival or something like that, it's just, we're just watching death just be presented in ourselves in the most horrifying way that we can think of. And it's just all their dreams are just getting disintegrated one by one. That's what I read. But the title still just got to me when I first, you know, watched this all those years back. But yeah, I was curious if you knew what the title meant after watching it.
You know, a few of the songs I listen to by various bands have this term that they've said that I'm like, why do all these different songs say this?
Mm-hmm.
It's slow motion suicide. I feel like that's what Requiem for a Dream is. There we go.
Okay, yes, that's a good way of saying it. Yeah. So, yeah, Sean, thank you for watching this movie. Hopefully it was not a bad choice.
It was a bad choice. I'm glad that I finally saw it. Uh-huh. Somewhere out there, my ex, Boris. Yes, his name was Boris. He just got a freckle and he's like, oh, he finally watched it.
He just got... He earned his freckle.
He earned his freckle.
Yeah, so I promise next week will not be as depressing. I'm going to go completely to the other side of the spectrum in genre. We're going to do Disney. Woo. Yes, we're going animated Disney. And yes, I'm excited for this episode. We're going to take it back to our childhood. It's going to be happy and sunflowers and rainbows.
Are you going to say what movie it's going to be?
Yes, because I want to know too. Yes. So next week, me and some friends got together to review The Little Mermaid.
That's my girl.
So, yes, we actually already recorded this episode not too long ago. So, I had a blast watching this movie with you guys and analyzing it as if it was some kind of college essay. It was like we dug deep.
I had a blast finding The Little Mermaid in your movie collection because you told us it was there.
Whatever. Okay, that is a story for next time. But yes, definitely tune in next week for The Little Mermaid. And remember to follow, share, also rate this episode and this podcast on any podcast app that you are using. Remember to follow me on Twitter. That is MGNP podcast. And I'm also on Instagram, Movie Geek and Proud. And once again, thank you for listening.